Hello, this is Chris Grimes. Before we get going on the open road of today's episode of the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius on UK Health Radio, this is part one of two, the extraordinary and, well, gut-wrenching story of a fellow actor called Robert Hans, and I'm calling this episode To Be or Not To Be, deliberately, existentially Shakespearean, because his extraordinary story is he took a split-second decision about 13 years ago to inject crystal meth and then descended into the chaos of a three-year abyss. Finally, now, hopefully, you know, 10 years to the day we're recording together, he is in recovery to find peace and a meditative tranquility. But anyway, it's the most extraordinary story. This is part one of two. If you have ears, prepare to peel them now as we listen to the story of Robert Hans, To Be or Not To Be. Welcome to the show. Part one of two. Welcome to another episode of the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Get quite literally in. Welcome to a Facebook Live, and welcome, welcome, thrice welcome to a gorgeous, lovely man, Mr. Robert Hans, who is a gorgeous actor. And this is, I'll blow a bit of happy smoke at you shortly. We've got history, I'll get into that. But don't forget, you're listening to the Good Listening To Show, where I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes. You'll see where Rob fits right in all of those, along to the clearing or serious happy place of their choosing, to all share with us their stories of distinction and genius. And it's my great pleasure to invite you into the clearing, Rob. We have history. We go way back when. We actually graduated in the same year together at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School, not to ages both, but circa many, many, many years ago. And I have the most brilliant abiding memory of your graduating, by the way. Two things. In our final year, you played Puck in Midsummer Night's Dream beautifully, and I was blown away by you. Not just being nice to you, it's the truth. And then there's an apocryphal story, which I think you've since denied, where you were taken on by Scott Marshall. And then the story was that somebody, either Scott Marshall themselves or a representative, was cycling across London with your CV in their lady basket as they rode across London in order to furnish Michael Pennington from the English Shakespeare Company with your CV. Marvellous. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Robert Hans.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for asking.
That's what you're welcome. So that was a little bit of happy smoke at you. I know, yeah. You know who you are, but you are an Olivier Award nominated actor. You've had a very, very illustrious career. Also, very interestingly as well, there's a sort of dark side to what I know we're going to be talking about as well. But it's so, so profound and wonderful. And I'm so happy to see you the right way up. Lovely man.
So much. Thank you. So,
how's morale? What's your story of the day, first of all, Robert Hans?
Well, I've got a really stinking cold, I tell you that, really bad. It's actually, since I've been looking at your face, it's sort of dried up a bit, but it was streaming in a sort of comical way. People on the tube just now were sort of moving away from me because they thought I was some sort of lunatic crying or something. But
They thought the next zombie apocalypse was starting opposite them or next to them.
Yeah, sort of red-rimmed eyes and sort of pale face. I had a little lie down just then, and I feel the benefit of that. Just 10
minutes.
Bless
you for lying down before you speak to me. And as I said just a few moments ago, before we pressed record, it's like we're twins because I too have a cold. And as, you know, two men sharing the tribulations of man flu, we know how bad it is.
Hear that. Yes, poor you.
And poor you right back at you. So yes, And apart from that, it's extremely welcome. Sorry, you're extremely welcome. That wasn't English, that bit there. So it's going to be my great joy and delight to curate you through a clearing a tree. There's a lovely, juicy storytelling exercise called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Bless you. There'll be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton and a cake. So it's all to play for. So as you know, there's going to be an invitation and an invocation to go as deep as you like, when you like, where you like. And just to finally position, it could be described as sort of the wilderness years that all actors experience, but very, very profoundly. I know that, well, I've watched a really extraordinary film, which you very bravely made, which is called The School of Rock Bottom, a podcast. And the title of which, rather profoundly, is From Injecting Crystal Meth to the Olivier Awards, which is an extraordinary title, and I was very struck by that. But I know we'll be talking about some of that. But that's not the main reason. I want to just blow some very happy smoke at you in what we talk about.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, I'll definitely be touching on that, because that's so much part of who I am today. So, yes, we will definitely go into that. In fact, it'll be my first thing that shaped me will be getting clean and how that happened.
So let's get you on the open road. So first of all, then, the clearing. Welcome to the clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to get told. So it's a serious, happy place of your choosing. And thank you for preparing and thinking about this. And obviously, I don't know till you tell me. But where does Robert Hans, a gorgeous actor, go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
Well, when I first thought about it, I just thought of it as a sort of straightforward what places do I like, and I love nature. Nature's very important to me, and it's very sort of restorative to me, to you know, my mental health and stuff. But truthfully, the place where I am clear-minded and receptive and present is when I'm meditating, which I do every day, and has I never thought I'd be that guy. I never thought I'd be that guy. People used to talk about meditation. Oh, please. I don't know if you remember, at drama school, we used to have, the voice teacher used to every now and then do a sort of relaxation thing. And everyone's saying, oh, I love it. Oh, let's get on the clouds. I couldn't wait to get off the clouds. It was not the place where I could be at all.
I think that's somebody called Lynette or Francis Thomas from memory.
It was Francis Thomas, yes. Yeah. And everyone loved it so much, and I felt like an alien because I didn't like it at all. It was the longest hour of my life that we spent on that cloud. You know, my head hurt, my legs hurt, you know, everything. I wanted to twitch. I couldn't do it. But anyway, now I do it, I guess, religiously. Yes. And I guess it's changed me. It's changed the way I am. So, yes, I would like to meet you in my meditative state. That's all right.
Thank you, and yes, please. And is it a post, I know we're going to go there, but is it a sort of newer practice post-recovery, or is it part of your recovery?
Oh, it's part, it's hand in hand of what keeps me going, yes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And in your meditative state, I know you said, get me off the cloud. I'm assuming we're not in a sort of wafty, wafty cloudyscape with your meditative state.
No, we're not really. No, we're not in a physical place at all. I think I'm just present with my breath. I think that's it. When my eyes closed and present, focusing on that, that's all I do. There's nothing very technical or complicated about it. It's as simple as that. And who would have thought that that simple act sort of changed my life, really. It's changed the man I am, definitely, and my ability to deal with things and just gets me through. And it's such a simple thing, and it's free. That's the other thing. It doesn't even cost anything. You don't even, you know, you can do it anywhere. And I think that was why I had such trouble with it, because there's, in a way, there's so little to it, but the benefits are immense.
It's an extraordinary testament to, you know, how the older we get, the better actors we become, because actually we truly appreciate presence more. You're a phenomenally gifted actor, that's a given, but I don't doubt you're an even better actor now because of your having found that meditative state place.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I don't know. I hope so.
Yeah. So if I may, then I'm going to arrive then a bit Waiting for Godot-esque existentially with a tree in your meditative state clearing. And by the way, you're the first guest in nearly 200 episodes that's just said it is the meditative state. And I'm really happy about that.
Good. That's nice.
And it's present with your breath, which I'm compelled by repeating, because I think that's just a lovely thing to have said. So I'm going to shake your tree now to see which storytelling apples fall out. And then how do you like these apples? It's 5 minutes to have thought about four things that have shaped you. Three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention and borrow from the film Up, as listeners will know, having listened to many episodes now, that's squirrels, you know what, never fails to grab your attention, irrespective of anything else that might be going on for you in your hectic life, even though I've got you meditating now. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you, actor Robert Hands, we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. So over to you, and I'll guide you through it. It's not a memory test. So interpret the shaking of your canopy as you see fit.
Right, and the first thing that has shaped my life is that 10 years ago today, Chris, I got clean. So it's funny that we've bumped this along for various reasons. I wasn't going to make it, then you couldn't make it, and it's happened on today. And today was the day. 10 years ago today, I got clean. In that, I stopped taking mind-altering drugs of any sort. It was the last time I did it. It was 10 years ago today. It might have been 10 years ago yesterday. Perhaps today is my first day clean. I 10 years ago today, I had no hope. I had no love. I certainly couldn't see any of those things, whether I had them or I hadn't. I had lost my career. I hadn't worked for 2 years. I had... I was living in a flat that I'd sort of demolished in a sort of mania of crystal meth addiction of I don't quite know what I thought I was doing, but I thought, you know, I've got to have, you know, I wanted everything perfect, but I didn't have any skills to put it right or indeed any funds to put it right. And it was the end of the road. There was no way out. And I backed myself into a corner. And I don't know really how it happened. I was using with someone who said, I'm going to stop this. This is going to be the last time I do it. Because when you inject drugs into your veins, the likelihood of getting a stroke increases as you near 50. And I was 49 at the time. And I don't know, through the haze of what I was doing, I sort of felt like someone throwing down the gauntlet. And I thought, well, I'm going to stop as well then. And I don't quite know where that thought came from. Because up until then, I'd felt a slight pity for the rest of the world, that I was in this parallel universe. And I was the cool guy. And all these poor saps, you know, having to, you know, live their lives and go to work and earn money and all those things, that they were somehow the losers. It's very interesting that from that day to this, I never once heard from the people I used to take drugs with. Not once did anyone ever get in touch and go, hey, Rob, how's it going? Because it wasn't about that. It wasn't about love. It wasn't about friendship. It was, or connection or any of those things. It was just about sort of self-serving, self-seeking, what you can get out of the situation. You know, hey, this guy's got a derelict flat. We'll go around there. And I didn't know what to do with myself, having made this decision. I never imagined I'd take crystal meth, and I never imagined I would inject it. They were things that other people did. I'm rather a good boy, I sort of always have been. And both those things ended up happening. I remember the first time I heard about it, someone saying, oh, there's this stuff on the streets and it's the most addictive thing you can get hold of. You know, it's ruined my life. And I remember thinking, well, that's not something I'm going to be doing. And in the event when someone offered me some, I just said, yeah, all right. And then when someone said that he thought that we should inject it, I thought, well, we'll do it. Well, another time, I said. And then he talked me around within seconds, within a minute. I had a needle in my arm. And
I mean, that's the most extraordinary line to cross, the idea of suddenly deciding. I mean, just the two words, crack cocaine and then inject crack cocaine. It's just so sub-next level despair into the depths of hell, one would imagine.
It's actually crystal meth, not crack cocaine. It's crystal meth.
Sorry. Yes.
Even as I relate it, I don't quite know why I didn't go, yeah, on your bike, mate. No thanks. You can do it, but I'm not doing it. I don't know why I didn't, yes. But I did. And
I mean, with hindsight, do you know why? I mean, by the way, this is so profound. Thank you so much for being so honest about it.
Yeah, you should go as deep as you like. Well, we're kicking off with deep.
Yes, and I'm right there, absolutely.
But why not? It was 10 years ago today, and we're talking about my life.
Congratulations, by the way. That's a really extraordinary thing. And I was blown away by the anniversary when you said, it's today. I thought, oh, crikey, that's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't. To this day, I don't know why I was that suggestible and why I was so willing to please someone else when they didn't give a damn about my life. But it was almost like that. It was like, oh, well, he says it's a good idea. Well, that's all right. With enough conviction, I don't know, I'll go enough. And it, you know, I suppose my journey since then has been to learn who I am and what I will and won't do nowadays. And I think now I have a firmer hold on that. Yes, I did that, and the descent was very rapid, and I sort of lost everything of any value very, very quickly. And I ended up, you know, in this tiny, tiny flat that I bought it because I had some money from the breakup of a relationship, and we sold our flat. And I bought this flat really because I kind of thought I could flag down a dealer if I could, you know, I'd open a window because it was in Camden. It was a studio flat, really. That was genuinely my thinking behind it. But then there I was, having made this decision to stop it, and nowhere.
I mean, there's a rationale now, as we can both admire, that sort of from a distance now, that sort of as a logic, that's a bit unhinged, isn't it?
Yeah, the whole thing was unhinged. I mean, yeah. It was nonsense. I mean, I don't know how I got to be that person. I don't know how it happened. It was happened quite quickly. I didn't do it for years and years and years. I did it for perhaps 2 years, if that.
I mean, it's a real a surprise as well, because I never perceived you as being somebody so impressionable. You know, you were much more of a sort of golden boy with a great career coming up. So there was so much positivity and vibrancy in life to you. And I didn't, there was no, I mean, everybody can have a sort of sinkhole of despair given the circumstances. But it's fascinating how you went, you know, you were at that edge to tip into that sinkhole.
Yes. I guess addiction doesn't, you know, it doesn't mind whether you're that rather glamorous person you described that I don't particularly recognize. They don't mind whether you're that or you come from a, you know, a really, from a life of far less privilege. It doesn't sort of make any distinction between those things. It's in you.
Sort of relatably but tangentially, in the world of comedy improvisation, there's an adage which is your first idea is from God, your second idea is from the devil. So the yin yang moment of you tipping into the bowl of despair, it's almost like that obviously, you know, wasn't from God, that was from the devil. And you went, all right then, like a binary choice, yes, no.
Yeah. I mean, I'd always struggle with a slightly compulsive and addictive personality. I'd real issues with food. I was always putting on weight and taking it off, and a real kind of compulsion around that. And then I discovered alcohol, and that became a big thing. And that I had to knock that on the head when I was 28, because it was certainly messing with my head, of this obsession with when am I going to have the next one. So I'd always had it about me, and for what it's worth, it had been in my family as well. My father was alcoholic, and he died of it, actually. And some of my brothers have had sort of issues as well. And it seems to be something that pops up in my family quite a lot.
By the way, I'm struck with how you're the seven ages of man, which we're coming on to later, but how when I first reconnected with you just before Christmas, I know you've also had your mum die as well. So it's so wonderful that you're the right way up, as I keep saying, and it's lovely. And again, congratulations for the 10 years of being dry. And presumably that means you're dry, meaning alcohol as well. Is that right?
Yes, that no mind altering substance passes my lips or nose or veins or wherever it may be. Yeah. And it was a real, you know, you say the question is, what shaped you? Well, it was getting clean was the hardest thing I've ever done. So I
managed to get 28 when the alcohol was given up. What in the timeline, when was the 10 years ago? Obviously, you had 20 years to then stop, because obviously
I mean, I didn't take up the crystal meth until the last 2 years. So perhaps when I was, I suppose 12 years ago, I guess I took it up.
It's real Breaking Bad territory as well. That's the substance in Breaking Bad that everyone.
Yes, it is. And funnily, I remember watching that actually when I was doing it, and thinking, well, it's not like that. You know, all these people seem to lead perfectly normal lives. You can't lead. Well, I couldn't lead a normal life when I was doing it. I couldn't function. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't hold down a job or keep a room tidy or any of those things. The minute I was on it, it was a mess. I couldn't function at all. There's that expression, a functioning alcoholic. Well, to me, it was quite, and I did, I guess, function as an alcoholic, but I certainly didn't function as a crystal meth user.
And it's so, you obviously got your career back. So I know you had a 3-year impasse where everything stopped for the reasons you're explaining, but you,
yes,
it's brilliant that you got your career back. Hence the sort of from Crystal Meth to the Olivier Award.
Yeah. I had to get a job because the minute the stuff started leaving my system, I could see all the more clearly that, oh my God, I was in complete trouble. And I've had a very charmed career. I've never really done anything else. And the thing is, I'd lost my self-confidence through what had happened with the drugs. And so I thought, well, I can't act anymore. I'm not sure I want to, but then who am I if I'm not an actor? Because it's all I've ever wanted to do, really. So anyway, I got this job through meeting someone who knew someone who knew someone in an office in Croydon of a trade magazine. It's called the Water, Sewerage and Waste magazine. And they were my home.
It's one of my subscriptions.
Well, it's a must read. But they were my home for 2 years, and I think I told the boss about it finally, and she sort of said, oh, I'll look after you, don't you worry. And so I worked there at not very much money, but I had somewhere to go. I needed some sort of structure to my life. And it took, you know, a while for the flat to get put back in order and to be habitable. And then eventually I got an audition for a little play at the Hampstead Theatre. And I got it. And then looking back, yes, it was just the right time. I was ready to start doing it a bit. And then I went straight back to the office, to the Water, Sewerage and Waste magazine. And then I got another little play at the Trafalgar Studios, I remember. And then I got a few episodes of a TV thing. And then all of a sudden I got a Western musical. And then I go, oh my God, I'm an actor again.
And was that Come From Away at that point, or have I got the timeline wrong?
No. It was called Mrs. Henderson Presents.
Ah, yes.
And all of a sudden I earned enough money in that time that it was not very long, but just enough to keep me out of the Water, Sewerage and Waste magazine and to start becoming a jobbing actor again. And things got better and better. And I momentum and confidence.
And by the way, a trajectory from crystal meth to water and sewage doesn't sound that big a distance, does
no,
it?
No, that's more of a, yeah, it's a pit stop. Yes,
yeah, that lovely.
Yes. And then what happened? And then I became, you know, really busy and really happily. So,
and did your agent stick by you throughout this, or have you changed agents?
Yeah, I told him what had happened.
Yes.
He was extraordinarily kind and supportive, and still is, actually.
Is it Scott Marshall still?
No, it's not, actually. No, it's not. For various reasons I won't go into, but there have been a couple along the way since then. Well, not least one of them, I had to go because I was hard at my drug addiction, and obviously it...
That wasn't the best thing on your CV at the time.
No.
Shall really. We say. Marvellous.
But eventually, yes, I started, you know, it all started to pick up again. And then you mentioned Come From Away, and that was a lovely musical that come over from Broadway, and it had been a big hit there. And it was about a community that had taken on 38 planes during 9/11 that had been rerouted there.
Yeah.
And were obliged to look after them. And it's a very theatrical telling of that story. There are only 12 people in the show, and we play, you know, the resident Canadian community as well as the people on the planes. And we,
yes.
And I had a really lovely storyline through that.
And this is your Olivier nomination.
Yes, and then I
went. Derivation. Yes. One of your wonderful career moments that I remember seeing many years after I left you at the Old Vic Theatre School was when you played the original Sir Robin in the original cast of Spamalot. And I came to see you in that.
Yeah.
And I Monty Python is my thing, and Michael Palin is my all-time comic hero. So it was just absolutely wonderful that I saw that. And I came to see, and I can't remember how many years that was post 1988.
Oh. It was about 2006.
So I came to see Brave Sir Robin Runaway. I came to see you in Spamalot, which was lovely.
Yeah, in 2006, I think yes. That was. That was it.
And by the way, that was the most profound number one shapage. I mean, absolutely profound. Is there anything else you'd like to say about that shapage?
No, I'm extreme. Yeah, no, he says, and then says something. I'm very grateful for it, that it happened to me. And I feel very humbled by it because I don't know how it happened.
Yes. And it wasn't it wasn't because your marriage was failing or anything like that, was it? It wasn't as linear as that. It was, and I in the documentary I watched as well, you said there was just a sort of impasse or a period in your life when you'd suddenly realised there was just no love around, you said, and it was no love for my... just no love for work, that just some mojo had just been dented. And I wondered whether that was because you were using, but actually it wasn't. That's just when you presumably became more susceptible to it.
No, the no love and the no hope was because I was using.
Right, I'm with you.
The minute I started using, those things can't cohabit with drug addiction. Well, it couldn't for me anyway.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimising your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so now, in the structure of it, it's the second thing that has shaped you.
Right. Well, I'm afraid it's another rather heavy thing.
No, please, that's fine. This is so good, by the way.
So the second thing is growing up gay. And I really struggled with it. It was not something that was like water off a duck's back to me at all. I didn't know what it was. I'd never heard of such a thing. I knew I wasn't quite like everyone else, but I didn't have the imagination to think, oh, well, and I was too young to know what was going on particularly. But I remember staying with, I was 10, and we were staying with some family friends, and I was brought up in Holland, and the only English that I heard until I was 10 was either my brother's, who were at boarding school in England. I wasn't. I went to school in Holland. Or my mother's English. My mother had sort of rather posh 1950s English. And so we were staying with these family friends, and the boy that lived there was the same age as me. And we were talking about something, and I said, well, that's very queer. And I can remember his lip curling and him saying, you know what that is, don't you? And I said, yes, it means strange or odd or unusual. He went, it means two men doing it, he said. I knew instantly that this was not a good thing to be, that I was it, and I didn't want to be it. I can remember the moment. I can remember the room. I haven't been there since, but I can remember the whole thing about it. It was like the lighting changed. I knew instantly all those things. And there I was, and this is, I think, an experience that a lot of gay people share, is you're alone. You're completely alone. You've got nowhere to go with it. You cannot have a conversation about it. This is before the internet. It's before, we live in far more enlightened times now. It's the ultimate insult in the schoolyard. It's the only representations of gay people, as far as I was aware, were Larry Grayson on The Generation Game. It was a sort of a joke, a laughing stock. Not you know, you laughed at them as much as with them. Or that's how I perceived it. And there I was, fighting these quite natural urges, but just wanting them to go away. And as I got older, I became, half bits of information would trickle down. And I'd heard that, oh, it's a phase, you grow out of it. I thought, well, perhaps it's a phase. And then I'd be really on that, well, how long does the phase last? As I got to be older and older and older, and it didn't seem to be going away. And it's a kind of torturous thing of trying to, being so self-aware, of trying to throw people off the scent, and by being a bit of a sort of Romeo, having lots of girlfriends, and being, of course, because I'm very good at talking to girls. I don't feel self-conscious because I don't really want anything in that way out of them. I'm very comfortable talking to women, but... And the loneliness, I feel such affection for that little boy now, but I didn't for the longest time. And of course, really open to being bullied, because I didn't want to stand out in any way. But children are pretty tough on each other. They smell difference, but go for it. They're not going to go, hey, yeah, Rob's a little bit different.
Such a great expression, by the way, very powerful. If they smell different, that's a really lovely way to put it.
Yeah, and of course, I didn't really have any problem with the things that people said and did to me. I think my whole life has been about forgiving myself for allowing those things to happen. But I had no one to talk to. I had no support.
And there's no contact with this boyhood friend, presumably. He's just someone that's disappeared.
Well, he wasn't actually a friend. He was my mother's friend's son.
Okay.
So we didn't live in the same place. They lived in the Midlands, and we were just staying with them for a summer. So, I mean, I know of him. I know he's still around.
And did he, I'm just intrigued to ask, did he end up gay as well? Because there's an irony sometimes...
Oh, yeah, no, he's not. Well, like, maybe, but I know he's married with children, so yes. I wouldn't be married to a woman with children. I have great compassion for that thing of just having to work it all out yourself. There was a book by E.M. Forster called Morris, which, and I was doing Howard's End at school, and so I knew about this other book that he'd written, that was famously about a gay love affair. And I remember going to the bookshop and buying it and coming home with it and hiding it under my pillow so no one saw it, and reading it in an afternoon, and the feeling of it was the only moment. I mean, how ridiculous! The only identification I could have was with a book written in 1925 or whenever it was written, which was published posthumously. It wasn't published until he died, because it was illegal to talk about such things. So yeah, it really shaped me, that loneliness of being unable to share with anyone. And there wasn't any weight behind it, but there was casual homophobia from both my parents. They didn't be in their bonnet about it. They weren't sort of table thumping, but you know, the odd they'd let the odd thing slip about. You know, my father used to say, "Well, I'm only queer as a coot," you know, things like that. You know, and I'd feel this when he'd say things like that. I'd think, so am I? Maybe it'll go away, and they won't ever find out. I don't know why I so badly didn't want to be it. I don't know why so badly, because other people really didn't hold on to it for as long as I did. But I held on to it right through my 20s. I still kept sort of kind of hoping it would go away.
Wow. The hope is they were accepting. Your dad was accepting. And I know your mum's not with us anymore. Is your father still with us?
No, he's not. He's not. But actually, no, when I finally got round to telling them, and I wish I'd done it so much sooner than I did. I mean, there was a few tiny hiccups, there was a little bit of awkwardness, but essentially it was fine.
Yes.
They were. Yeah, it's not like they were down the gay pride parade blowing a whistle. They weren't those sort of people.
Yes.
But at the same time, we got to a place of complete ease about the whole thing.
Wonderful. These are such profound shapages, by the way. Thank you. Do you want to go to shapage number three now, please? Which is
maybe not three.
Cashier number three. So shapage number three, please.
It's quite difficult to talk about, but it is my spirituality. And before I got clean, I would never have imagined I'd become the guy I am. And my spirituality isn't centered on any religion. There's no religious faith at all that I have. But it lies in meditation, it lies in stillness, and it lies in yoga. Yeah, I am that guy. I am the yoga meditating guy. And it provides me with a perspective of my place in the world. And in the best way, how unimportant I am in the scheme of things. And it helps tremendously with anything that happens in my life. I've become very kind of accepting of things, which, you know, I might not have, and I would have. I wish I'd found it so much sooner. It sustained me through my recovery from drug addiction as well. It's something else to call on. I guess I'm less likely now to look for approval from people or from work or from whatever it may be. Excuse me. Than I would have been before.
Mm-hmm. So there's sort of an I'm at peace now, is what I'm hearing.
Well, I mean, it's contingent on me doing the stuff, really. It's contingent.
Yes. Meditation. It's a practice to be peaceful.
Exactly. And to do yoga and to, you know, I write a gratitude list. I write a list of 10 things I'm grateful for every day.
Yes.
To keep me in a place of, you know, even when things are bad, and of course things are bad, it's not like you know, now I've discovered meditation and yoga, everything is fine. Of course it's not. Life happens.
Yes.
But it somehow gives me I don't have to fill up myself with food or drugs or sex or whatever. I don't need to do those things anymore.
I'm sort of hearing you don't need to seek validation anymore. You just are and at peace with that practice.
I think that's the journey, Chris. I don't think I've arrived there. I don't think that's somewhere I'll ever arrive, but I can see I'm on that path. Yes.
There's a quest towards that.
Yes, and I can see that now. And it's not to say that I don't have ambition and drive. I absolutely have those in spades. But at the same time, I find with auditions, I can give them 100%.
Yes.
But then I can walk out the room and I more or less let them go.
Yes.
Because I never thought I'd be an actor again. I never thought I'd own property. I never thought any of these things were going to happen to me. And they happened, and they happened in their own time. Yes. And I had lots of experiences like that. In COVID, I didn't work at all during COVID. And then all of a sudden, it all came back, and it came back in a sort of avalanche of work and indeed money came my way.
Yes.
I guess I don't know. I don't know what's next in store, and I'm quite comfortable being in that place.
So that brings us to the end of part one of the two-parter with actor Robert Hands. So tune in next week for the second instalment of the episode, To Be or Not To Be. Don't forget, if you'd like to be in the show too, then check out the website at thegoodlistening2show.com, and there are a number of series strands which will help you decide how and which episode strand you'd like to come in on. And in fact, hot off the press, there's a brand new series strand, which is called The Big Old Birthday Show. So if you know of anybody who's got a big O birthday coming up, be that they're 40, 50, 60, 70, 90 or 180, then they can come in to the Good Listening To Show Big Old Birthday Show, and where you can wrap an episode of the show around the birthday boy or birthday girl's celebration of their big O birthday. So yes, check out the goodlistening2show.com website, and I'll see you next week for more stories from the clearing. Thank you very much indeed. To your good health, and goodbye.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from the clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye.